open this week's edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast by giving you a something to mull over, something to think about, because the folks at SB Nation, hosts of Purple Row, hosts of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, so therefore SB Nation, like our dads, they had a tweet today, which is a really good one, which is, which historic sports moment do you wish Twitter would have been around for? Now, my answer to that is I wish Twitter was never invented. but I do think that it would be a fun thing to debate in Rocky's history. So let's talk about that in a little bit. There's one thing, the fabulous Spencer Hall at EDSBS on Twitter, every day should be Saturday. He put together the top college football moments. I don't think I ever knew about this, but back in 1996, during an Auburn-LSU game, Auburn's old basketball arena burned down behind the football stadium live on television. I don't think I have ever heard
this. I did not remember that.
No, me neither. And there's like this crazy video. There's a feature somebody put on YouTube. I don't know if it's an ESPN feature or what, but it's embedded in the story. And watching it, it's insane. It's like this massive inferno in a building that borders the football stadium at Auburn. Like, I don't think I've ever heard this story. And I would assume because they have this video up and the way the guy's talking to the firefighters talking about it. Like, I would assume nobody was hurt, nobody was killed. But, good God, that's terrifying. So anyway, mull that over. Yeah. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, I love a good mull. Yeah, all right.
So, hey, welcome into this week's edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. My name is Tyler Mon.
And I am 3-time Emmy winner, Anthony Masterson.
And
I can say 3-time now because we won again.
Because you won again. What was that? What's back the category again?
Best studio show for a limited run.
Wait,
so like you're up against.
Years. Shouldn't it be back to
back to years? Yeah.
Three out of four then?
No, this is back to back. Just first we've been nominated for.
Oh, I thought you said you were 3-time.
Yeah, because I won 2 last year and then 1 this year.
Oh, I see.
Well, yeah, is that also how that works? Like,
I don't know. Yeah, I would think so. It's 3 separate awards.
Right?
Yeah, I would think. I would think so.
That's what I was thinking. Okay.
I think so. Episode 132, by the way. Had to look it up.
Yeah. But like, so, yeah, we were up against, your NBA on TNT, the Inside the NBA guys, the March Madness crew, other, like, the TBS crew for postseason baseball and all that jazz. So,
hey, congrats.
Hey, better than losing.
Tell that to the Rockies, friend. Am I right?
Hey, this is the first time we've actually done this podcast where they've been more than 2 games over 500 in a month.
It's also probably the first time we've done this podcast after they went, and I'm approximating here, but I think yesterday they stranded 79 guys on base.
So, yeah, I looked this up. Thanks to a friend of the podcast, Ted Chalfin, at Ghost to Marv on Twitter. He asked the Twitter sphere how many guys the Rockies have ever left on base in a shutout. And I was like, huh, that's a good question. I looked it up. It was a game back in 2005 against the Nationals. They stranded 15 men on base and got no runs. They got 13 hits in the game. And
oh,
no
my
runs.
God. They got shut out on 13 hits?
So yesterday was the tied for the second most they've ever left on base in a shutout.
Wow. What was the final total yesterday?
11.
11 left on base.
Yeah.
11 men left on base.
That's tough to do in a shutout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like every inning they get 2 men on, 1 out. Runners at second and third, nobody out. First and third, 1 out. Whatever it was, and he just knew nothing was going to happen.
And then Ian Desmond was always up.
Always. Yeah. Ian Desmond batted in 4 different spots in the order yesterday, I'm pretty sure. Because it certainly felt, well, and this was pretty great too. Last night, Anthony tweets after Nick Groke quoted Bud Black saying Ian Desmond, "Oh, he just didn't see the slider today." And then Anthony tweeted, "Today's starter for the Milwaukee Brewers is Yolish Chacin, who throws his slider over 50% of the time to right-handed batters." So this will go well.
He'll see it. Yeah.
This will go great today.
Ian left, he left 6 men on base yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Ian Desmond did.
Good day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's chat about Eve Desmond for a hot second, just to get that out of the way.
Yeah,
because we that's what's on the lips of every Rockies fan at this point.
What the folks are talking about, and we've spent, to be fair, too much time over the last couple episodes on Ian Desmond, but he is just such a glaring weakness right now in every way. He's not even, you know, last year when Trevor Story was struggling, you could at least say, well, but he plays good enough defense that it justifies keeping him in the lineup waiting for his bat to come around. You can't even say that about Ian Desmond. Ian Desmond's a below average defensive player at first base.
Yeah. Below average defensive player at first base.
Well, below average at the plate.
He is somewhere in some kind of sunken place offensively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had the great game on Sunday. Won the game for the Rockies, had a couple of nice home runs. It was great to see.
Yeah.
You think maybe he'll start to come around. And then he followed that up with his next two games going a combined 0 for 8 with 7 strikeouts, leaving 9 men on base.
Has anybody seen any tweets from Goodman after the last two games? Because after the two-homer game, he retweeted someone who said, you know, how long can they keep putting Ian Desmond in the lineup? And after the two-homer game, he quote-tweeted that and said, still feel the same way.
Yes.
So that's a major league broadcaster suggesting that after 500-plus plate appearances, one good game suggests that Ian Desmond is fine and all of this has been worth it.
And
like that,
to be fair with this kind of stuff, if you were a broadcaster, you know this because you've worked in the industry. You know that the broadcaster and the players have a very different relationship.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
You don't want to bury a guy because that's how you lose access. That's how you lose trust. And I understand that's what Goodman's doing there. And I also understand the same way why all these reporters, bloggers, whoever you want to, asking Bud Black to rip his own player in the post-game interview. Bud Black's not going to do that.
Yeah.
They're trying to get a juicy quote. Bud Black is smarter than that.
Totally.
He's not going to say anything stupid. He's not going to lose his clubhouse. He's not going to lose his players, no matter how poorly they are performing.
Of course.
That is not going to happen. We can complain to each other about how bad Ian Desmond is playing.
We do.
Because that's what we can do.
Quite a lot.
It's not up to the broadcasters to rip on him. It's not up to Bud Black to rip on him. It is up to us to rip on him to each other.
I think my frustration and, you know, it's definitely a much different context in which somebody like Drew Goodman comments on a team versus even just media that cover the team, etc. But there was a way to address that wasn't, and it's Twitter, so it doesn't come off with context and tone and whatever, but you cannot take one good game and try to extrapolate it as, you still feel that way? If you would have quote tweeted that and said, you know, this is what's possible with Ian Desmond when he gets things going, that's fine. But, like, come on.
He's still 4 for his last 29. Yeah, 4 for 29.
With how many strikeouts over that time?
11.
A bajillion?
That's just 7 games. Yeah, that's just his last 7 games.
It's just, God almighty.
Every week there's a new blank for blank with Ian Desmond.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I mean, it's such a black hole. And this is the conversation yesterday. I made the mistake of trying to showcase some human emotion toward Ian Desmond. And then all of
dumbass.
I was having this conversation over text with a former pal of Rockies Twitter, Cameron Goldner, who has been so smart to, like, go off to college and turn himself
get away from
off
Twitter.
Of Rockies Twitter. Yeah. But Cam and I were talking about how this conversation, when the Rockies were terrible, Rockies Twitter was fun because in order to be a part of Rockies Twitter, you had to be somebody who was nihilistic and invested enough to watch a bad team. And now it brings out of the woodwork, like, a lot of good people, but also just, like, the crazies who are just like, well, maybe I'll try cheering for this baseball team while I'm waiting around for OTAs to start. So, you know, not necessarily the greatest level of conversation anymore these days, sometimes. But yesterday I said, I feel, and I do, I feel genuinely awful for Ian Desmond. Watching him go up there and continue to struggle at bat after at bat after at bat, being humiliated in front of tens of thousands of people is uncomfortable. That's uncomfortable to watch, and it's sad to watch. It's sad to watch a professional athlete struggle, have no way out of it, look completely lost, and continue to just be thrown into the fire every single day. And the response that I got was like, I don't feel bad for him. He's making $22 million this year. Okay, first of all, aside from the psychology of the fact that, like, money literally does not buy happiness, and that's not a cliche, there have been, like, massive psychological studies done over long periods of time that showcase that if you make a ton of money, you're not necessarily any happier than somebody who doesn't make that much money. If you make $50,000 compared to $5,000 a year, there's a massive change in your level of happiness. If you make $50 million versus $50,000 a year, there's really not that large of a change. And you can think that that's stunning, but that's what actual studies
it's
and
all about perspective.
Psychologists say. Yeah. Right. So I don't, but I responded and said, I've never understood the logic that because somebody makes money, they're not worthy of empathy. And right. and then that just blew up into a whole thing. I just don't get, like, it's possible to think that Ian Desmond should be doing better to earn his paychecks and also feel bad for a guy who is really bottoming out in his professional career right now. Like, those two things can coexist.
Like, he's still a legitimate human being.
Exactly.
Like, he's not complaining to the media. He's not complaining to anybody else. He's not being a clubhouse cancer as far as we have heard or anything along those lines. He's just going about his business and doing his job, albeit doing it poorly a lot of the time. But he is going out there and trying to do his job. It is not for anybody else to try to make him feel like less than what he's already doing.
And I just don't get – I don't know. It's just – it's tough to watch. I mean, yesterday, I think it was his second at bat – he flailed and missed the first swinging strike of his at bat. He, you know, kind of smacked the bat back from this follow through. And you could just see, like, this is a guy who was ready to snap. This is a guy who's at his breaking point. And that's awful to watch. Like, that is a really, really, it's like watching a comedian bombing on stage through a set that he's for some reason making go 3 hours.
Oh, I'm never more comfortable than watching a comedian be bad.
Yeah, that's the most, so uncomfortable. The most awkward thing. And that's like in a sports context, that's what Ian Desmond feels like right now. Like you have no faith that anything good is going to happen with him at the plate. And when it does, then it's just like a nice
surprise.
Like on
surprise. Sunday, yeah.
Yeah. Or the game in Washington, you know, where he hits a game-winning homer. Like, it's just a nice surprise. But you really just expect, like, yesterday, he comes to the plate, what was it, first and third, one out. And
in
the second inning, gets caught looking. And the unanimous reaction from Rockies Twitter was, well, at least he didn't hit into a double play. Which
and
is
that was,
true.
And that was a good thing.
Yeah, like, that's the positive outcome. The most positive outcome for me and Desmond right now is when he doesn't put the ball in play and doesn't cost you multiple outs. Like, that's how bad it's gotten. It just sucks. But the problem is, nobody seems to be committed to finding a solution.
No.
And that's where...
We're going to keep having this exact same conversation every single day that he's put in that lineup until or if ever he figures it out again.
And that's brutal. Like, this is not a conversation that we want to have week in and week out on this podcast, but at the same time, it is the single most glaring issue about this team, because the thing about a baseball lineup, especially one that's struggling, you can't hide a bad hitter. If this was the 98 Rockies and you were trotting out a massive offensive lineup, sure, you could slide Ian Desmond in the 8-hole, nobody's going to care.
Yeah.
But these are the 2018 Rockies where nobody's hitting. And you get situations, except for a couple guys, but you get situations like yesterday where he comes up with runners on, and every single time he comes to the plate, you can just feel the air go out of the ballpark. And that's, you know, the Rockies still have the third worst team average in the National League. They're oddly enough tied with two other teams that are in playoff position right now, the St. Louis Cardinals and the Arizona Diamondbacks, at a .228 team average. But, like, this is by far the worst offense in franchise history. Like, April was the worst offensive month in franchise history, and it wasn't even really that close.
No, it was not. But there's still time. Yeah. I mean, they're hitting .228 as a team. Like, they've never hit under, what, .258 as a team over a season. .258 was 2011. And they're hitting .228 right now.
Man. And they, at hashtag Coors, are not even hitting what would have been the worst season average of all time. They're hitting .252 at Coors Field. .215.
Yeah. Fewest runs per game as well they've ever had. They've never scored fewer than 4.4 runs a game. They're averaging 3.9 right now. But hey,
you know, I don't know. last couple weeks, we said, like, I don't know how much longer you put Ian Desmond in the lineup, but Bud Black's literal quote last night was, I'll trot him out there tomorrow.
I'm going to keep trotting him out there. Like, oh, super.
I don't know.
I mean, you look at, like, the OPSs in the lineup. The top OPS is Nolan Arenado, of course, 1024. Blackman, 966. DJ, he's finally back, 858. Dahl, 847. Great. Then Story, 770. That's fine. And then it nosedives. The next best by a regular starter is Chris Iannetta at 684, which is well below average, and it does not get better from there, because you got guys underneath him like Gerardo Parra, Carlos Gonzalez, Ian Desmond, Tony Wolters, and the list goes on and on.
Yeah. But
the best thing is about this team is that they actually won a lot of games last week.
Exactly. That's the thing. They were on a 6-game winning streak going into yesterday. Yeah. And so it's strange because I feel like we have episodes lately where we talk just so negatively about everything that's going on, mostly because of Ian Desmond. But they won 6 straight games. They won 9 out of 12 over a certain stretch. They ended up winning the series over San Diego at home with 2 wins in the last 2 games on April 24th and 25th. Then they won the series opener at Miami and then lost 2 straight. And over the span of a 3-game skid, the Rockies scored 3 runs, including 1 over their last 18 innings in Miami. And then they bounce back and win 6 straight. They win a series in Chicago. They sweep a series in New York. And they come home and beat a first-place Angels team in a very good game on Tuesday night that I was at with Nate Kreckman. And it was just like a well-played, fun, entertaining baseball game. John Gray goes out, kind of struggles a little bit in the first inning, threw like 28 pitches in the first inning, still manages to go 7. Wade Davis makes it a little bit interesting in the ninth, but gets the save. Like a very well-played baseball game. And then they lay an egg yesterday, and you know what? That's going to happen. Like every once in a while, you're riding a 6-game winning streak, you're going to play a crap game. That's fine. But they continue to win, and they continue to win really in spite of all statistical evidence.
Well, offensively, They're winning for a reason. It's because of their starting pitching.
Yeah.
I mean, they're 9-4 in their last 13 games. Since April 24th, would you believe your Colorado Rockies have the best ERA from the starting staff of any team in baseball?
Pretty incredible.
1.90 is the starter's ERA since April 24th. 1.90. That even includes Tyler Anderson's 5-inning, 4-run performance yesterday. 1.90 over the last 13 games. They're allowing only 55 hits in 80 and a third in that time, a 190 opponent average. They've allowed only 7 home runs in that time. They're striking out a batter per inning. They've only walked 15 total guys in 13 games. This starting pitching has, we're seeing the best run from Rocky starting pitching that we have ever seen in 25 years right now. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys are out there going 6-7 every day. They had a run of 9 consecutive quality starts, which is a franchise record. I mean, everything about the starting staff has finally come to fruition. Everybody is pitching well from the top to the bottom. And that's something we have never seen before heretofore from a Rockies starting staff. I mean, Gray has finally figured it out. Bettis is, like, I think leads the, like, National League in pitcher war. Like, Tyler Anderson has pitched pretty well overall. Kyle Freeland is getting a strikeout rate up, pitching all right. Herman Marquez had a couple of great starts. Down the line, everybody is picking up where the next guy left off and moving on. No one wants to be the one guy to break that chain.
And the Rockies right now are tied for the second most wins in the National League. They are tied for the second wild card spot. They're only 3.5 games back of the D-backs. And the D-backs started off insanely. The D-backs have still not lost a series this entire season. But the D-backs are 24-12. Like, they're a catchable team. They're not the Red Sox right now. They're not the Yankees right now. So the Rockies are positioned very well, and they're positioned well on the strength of that starting staff. The other thing the Rockies have done well this year, they've won close games. And we talked about this a lot last year as well. They've got the best winning percentage in the National League in one-run games. They're 7-3 in one-run games. They've got the best winning percentage in the National League in two-run games. They're 6-1 in two-run games. And they've also been able to close out victories. And we talked about this last week. Some 17-1 when leading after 6 innings. 17-0 when leading after 7 innings. 19-0 when leading after 8 innings. So when
that's what they did last year too.
Yeah.
You know,
when they get it to the bullpen, it gets locked down. That's, you have to have that, because when you are the Rockies, when you let those games slip away, especially when you have an offense that isn't really pulling its own weight right now, those are games that you don't get back. And because it doesn't seem like you're a team that's going to luck your way into, you know, that finale at Washington notwithstanding, you're not going to luck your way into a whole lot of wins by your offense saving your team's bacon in the ninth. You know, hashtag but their run differential. It's not great. They're minus 16 in run differential. But, you know, it's also May 10th, and we had this debate last year. And
until August.
One of the stats guys, one of the always surprisingly dickish stats guys, baseball stats guys on Twitter, gave us the whole, look at the Texas Rangers last year and their run differential. How'd that work out for them? They won the
division. They made the playoffs.
In 2016?
Yeah, they won the division, made the playoffs. I'm sure they were thrilled.
I don't know what your argument is here. But, you know, it's they're doing it. And we come on and we talk about, like, oh, man, this team's so frustrating. Ian Desmond's so bad. I don't get what the deal is with the bullpen. Brian Shaw's been terrible. But then, like, they keep winning. So, I don't know. I'm okay with it.
I mean, the thing is, this has been a transformation for this Rockies team ever since they brought in Mark Wylie. Like, Mark Wylie, when he returned to the Rockies in 2012, he was a pitching guru, worked with the Marlins for a long time. He is finally, they brought him as like a special, you know, special whatever to the whatever to work with all the pitchers. And now when he came back with this team, you realize that this guy is the one who's been leading this charge of all these young pitchers. And finally, they have enough talent at the big league level that it's all of his hard work starting to come to fruition. And all these guys are buying in and drinking the purple Kool-Aid. And we finally figured out that it's not only a possibility to be able to pitch at altitude, but you can pitch well at altitude. You can pitch and win games at altitude if you have the right mindset, if you have the right stuff. And these guys in the rotation right now, you know, barring injuries, which they've had none this year, they've had five guys make all their starts.
One of only, I think, three teams in baseball for that.
This does not happen that often when you only have five guys make starts for over in course of an entire season. So they're buying in and they're realizing that it is possible. And right now they are carrying this team, which is hard to say for a Colorado Rockies franchise that has always relied on their offense. But they are. It's the starting pitching that is bringing this team into playoff contention right now. And that's where this team should be. It's where this team wants to be. And they're not going to be there if they don't get this, you know, for the some more offense for the whole season. But right now, it's okay that the pitching is carrying the team, because baseball is a very, very long season. A lot of things happen in over the course of a baseball season. It is okay that right now one sector is carrying the weight of another sector as part of this team.
Yeah, that's
like,
I was
at some point the bullpen's going to be really great. At some point the bullpen's going to suck. At some point the offense is going to get in gear and score, you know, 50 runs in five games. And the pitching might suck. They might need some more runs. It's okay that's happening right now. But it is, and we should enjoy the fact that we are seeing the greatest run of starting pitching in 25 damn years with this team.
Yeah.
It's hard to look back to be in the moment and look at it from an outside point of view, like an out-of-body experience kind of thing, where you're at the same time in the moment but also looking at it and being like, wow, I should really be enjoying this. Because it's hard. It's hard to do that. I'm terrible at just getting out there and being in the moment with something. I'm always trying to look forward to the next thing happening, no matter what I'm doing in life. Always looking forward to the next thing. So I have to like literally tell myself, like force myself to appreciate what's happening right now in the moment with this team, because you need to appreciate these things. Baseball is a game that is so predicated on failure that you have to enjoy the moments, the positive moments when they happen.
Yeah.
We can't just always like Rocky's Twitter is pretty terrible at this.
Yeah.
No surprise.
Oh,
there.
Oh yeah.
They are the most fatalistic bunch of people I've probably ever met in my entire life. And I know that the Rockies are not alone in that, because every single fan base has that exact same fatalistic bent.
Especially when you're a fan base that hasn't been successful traditionally.
But I'm seeing, like, you know, the Red Sox Twitter has this, like Yankees Twitter
those
has this.
Are the worst.
Oh, is it? Yeah, of course. Like,
but
like,
no, I see your point.
But Mariners Twitter is just us in the American League. Like,
Twitter.
Yes. So, like, I know that Rockies Twitter isn't alone in being the most fatalistic bunch, and that's just that what's what plays on Twitter, and that's fine, whatever. It's soul sucking, and who cares? Yeah. But if we just go through every day, like, I mean, people were complaining about Ian Desmond constantly, like without fail, during a 6-game win streak.
Yeah.
You know, that's that's where it jumps the shark for me. I can't, like, we always say that our shows are so much better when the Rockies suck because we have more to talk about and more to complain about. And that's kind of true. And I get that. But it's like that old adage where if you have bad news, you tell 100 people. If you have good news, you tell 10 people, you know?
Yeah.
No, like I get very, very tired of that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the other thing that, and we've talked about this time after time after time over the course of this podcast, it's not easy for, especially in this market, it's not easy for people to take a 1-game sample from a baseball season and just be able to say, no, whatever, they play again tomorrow. Because here, we're conditioned to respond to everything as though it's the NFL. Yeah. And it's not, and it's not just here. I mean, it's 2018 society. We live in the Twitter age in which you have to have a take ready 5 seconds after something happens. And like yesterday, Jesse Spector tweets out a joke and says the Rockies were doing better when they were scoring runs and not giving up runs. They should go back to doing that. And some dude responded to us, it's 1 game, why don't we calm down? Like, dude, Jesus. Have some humor about the situation. Like, nobody is being serious right now. It's a Wednesday afternoon game in the beginning of May.
Like, against a really good team.
Calm down. Like, against a
the Angels are
going to
be in the playoffs this year. Yeah.
Like, I don't.
They'll be a playoff team.
So that's the struggle, too, because we were living in an age in which everything has to be just the scorching hottest of takes. And sometimes there you can't evaluate a game that is played out over a 162-game schedule. You can't evaluate that sport on, well, what does this mean for the larger narrative? The reason why I think Ian Desmond is a topic of conversation is he is the narrative right now.
Yeah.
So I understand that people want to talk about that, but at the same time, yeah, like, there was not much conversation about, like, hey, this team has won 6 straight against good teams. It's not like the Rockies won 6 straight and they were beating up on the Cincinnati Reds and the Padres and the Marlins over that stretch. In fact, they could have won more than 6 straight, but they lost 2 out of 3 to the now 13-23 Miami Marlins. But they went
out
and they beat
2 runs in 3 games.
Yeah, it was great. They went out, they beat a Mets team that started the season 11-1, and yeah, the Mets have fallen off a cliff since then, but, you know, the Mets are a good team. Chicago
Mets.
Cubs
yeah.
are 1 game back at 500, they're 19-15, you know, and then you come home and you beat a really, really good Angels team, so there are a lot of positives, but still, all the discussion was like, ah, oh, man, this team sucks, I don't know what the deal is with Desmond, the bullpen's terrible. So, I don't know, maybe, I feel like every year we kind of have one of those episodes where we're like, just try to keep things in perspective, and, you know, we have to... We have a foil, a character that we play. I think the podcast account on Twitter is its own personality, and we try to be funny, and we try to be somewhat fatalistic and capture
it's
the...
It's got a mind of its own now.
Yeah, but, you know, like, when
like
you're
how?
Evaluating this from the standpoint of actual sports fans, this is a team that's won 6 out of its last 7 games, 9 out of its last 13 games, they're 3.5 games back at first place, they're 5 games over .500 on May 10th, You know, I was on the radio the other day, and a host asked me a question. Rockies are 5 games over .500, but what do they need to... I want to see them 10 games over .500, 15 games over .500. What do they need to do to do that?
Me too.
I was like, I don't know. Keep doing this exact same thing for another 6 weeks, and it adds up to 10. Like, that's baseball. You have to do it over a very long stretch of time. I was in a yoga class yesterday. And the
wow, name dropper.
And it was like... It was one of those ones where I went because a lovely girl in my life was teaching the class as, like, part of this teacher training thing, whatever. And so they, like, handed it off between a bunch of these different teachers. But, like, the theme, and I don't ever go to these yoga classes. The yoga classes I go to are at the Wash Park Rec Center. So it's me and 75
yeah.
septuagenarians. But this one was, like, an actual yoga class, like a Core Power. But, like, their conversation throughout the whole thing is, like, the concept of being patient with things because everything is a process in life and how difficult that is. Like, you were talking about, it's not easy to, as Clint Hurdle would say, be where your feet are. It's not easy to just look at what's going on in the moment and be appreciative and receptive to that. It's way easier to think, like, okay, when this is over, what am I doing next? When this rocky streak is over, what happens next? But baseball is a sport that forces you to accept the fact that one out of 162 games doesn't really mean all that much. It is part of a much larger process over the course of a season. If the Rockies went on a 10-game losing streak, and we had this conversation last year a lot, they went on a 10-game losing streak. That is the equivalent of the Broncos losing one game.
One game in a row.
16-game season.
Which they did a lot last year.
And the conversation around here is always just so life and death about, because nobody intelligently talks baseball with the exception of like one or two people in town. There's an entire station that doesn't talk baseball. When you try to evaluate it from the knee-jerk Monday morning quarterback world that is sports talk media, and especially sports talk radio, and especially sports talk radio in this town, it gets you nowhere. So just keep in mind, this is a team that's won 6 out of 7. They won 9 out of 13. They're 5 games over .500. Like, if you went into the season and said, like, all right, on May 10th, the Rockies will be 21-16. I think we all would have said,
like, oh,
yeah,
hell
seems,
yeah.
Seems about right.
No, I'd be ecstatic. Figured. I'd be like, yeah, that's great.
5 games over .500, 3.5 back in the division. That's fine.
And the Rockies this year, they're playing well against good teams too. We mentioned that before, but they're 14-10 against teams that are .500 or better. That's the fifth best mark in all of baseball. The only teams better than them right now in that case, the Yankees, the D-backs, the Red Sox, and the Braves. The surprising Braves.
Yeah,
that's it.
The Braves.
Only 4 teams better than the Rockies against teams of .500 or better this year. Just those 4 teams and 3 of the top teams in all of baseball.
The other thing
list
to keep in mind, too, is we talk about season-long narratives. The D-backs are going to cool off at some point. You can't win an entire season's worth of series. So at some point, the D-backs are going to go through a cooling period. If the Rockies happen to catch that cooling period at the same time as they get hot, and this is, I guess, in some ways saying, you just know this team is going to hit. But over the course of a 162-game season, like, there will be good offensive stretches. If you're able to do that and get on a good roll when another team is coming back to the pack, then all of a sudden you make this a two-horse race.
That's what the Yankees did to the Red Sox just the last 2 weeks.
Exactly. The Yankees have won 17 out of 18 now.
Is that right? And the Red Sox started 17-2, and now the Yankees are ahead by a game. Like,
God almighty. That is nuts.
Yeah. But it was just timing.
Yeah.
That's all it was.
That's what it takes. That's what it takes in baseball. And unfortunately, like, timing in May doesn't really mean a whole lot. But
it does not.
You can get to June, July, August, and you start catching yourself playing well when other teams are fading. Those are the important moments over the course of a baseball season. And you look at the rest of this division, the Padres, we don't have to talk about the Padres. They're not a good team. They're not going to be a good team this year. They'll be a good team in 2019 and going forward. They're not a good team right now. The Giants are hanging in. They're a game over .500. But that team,
they're getting wrecked
by the
Phillies currently.
Yeah. And I think if the Giants were going to make noise, they would have made noise out of the gate. Like, I think that team, to be at 19-18 right now, a very old roster that has already dealt with pretty significant injuries, does not strike me as a team like, oh man, eventually they're going to get it sorted out, and that's going to be a team to look out for. And I could be wrong. I mean, the Giants, maybe they'll go on a stretch where they'll be really good.
They just had one. They won 8 of 11.
But, like, you know, that's
but they're also one of the oldest teams in baseball.
Exactly. And, you know, if Madison Bumgarner doesn't come back and stay healthy, you know, if Jeff Samardzija doesn't stay healthy, there's not a lot on that team. There's nothing in the system. There's Tyler Beede and nothing else in the system. And Tyler Beede wasn't great in his major league debut. Aside from those guys, like, who are you looking at to carry that team? Evan Longoria, good player, old. Andrew McCutchen, good player, old. Hunter Pence, good player, as weird as it is to say, kind of old now. You know, they have Brandon Belt, they have Brandon Crawford, they have some of these guys that are young, talented pieces. Buster Posey, obviously, is Buster Posey, but
yeah, they'll beat the Rockies in some frustrating series throughout the year.
Like, absolutely. But, like, that's not a team that I expect to be in the race. And that brings us to the Dodgers, who had to put Clayton Kershaw on the disabled list. Justin Turner has still not played a game for them this season, although he took live BP yesterday at Dodger Stadium. He expects to be back by next week. Corey Seager's done for the year. Like, if the Rockies are ever going to win a division, this season, right now, for all the narratives, for all the negativity, this season is stacking up like a season that could very much go well at the end for the Rockies. They're three and a half games back. They're 500. And things are stacking up for them.
Here are the five infielders currently on the Dodgers 25-man roster. Cody Bellinger, great player, rookie of the year, going to be good. Kike Hernandez, Tim LoCastro, Max Muncy, and 90-year-old Chase Utley. Those are the five infielders they have on their roster. Chris Taylor obviously is playing shortstop now to the injury to Seager, but those are the five infielders they have on their roster.
Tim LoCastro was a fairly middling prospect. Max Muncy was a prospect for a little while in the A's.
For the A's, yeah, he's 27.
Is a guy who's kind of past his status of being a promising major league talent.
Yeah, but you look at
Chase Utley is like the third best infielder on that team, and he's 900 years old.
Their DL: Tony Cingrani, Clayton Kershaw, Tom Kohler, Hyunjin Ryu, Julio Urias, Logan Forsyth, Corey Seager, Justin Turner. That's a pretty good team.
That's three MVP candidates. You throw in Kershaw.
Yeah, it's true.
And a perennial Cy Young winner.
Yeah.
And you know, honestly, evaluating it from an objective 30,000 foot point of view, not looking at it from the standpoint of a Rockies fan, it kind of sucks to look at a marquee franchise that may have, I don't want to say seen its window close, but Clayton Kershaw, we don't know what this injury is. The Dodgers said it's biceps tendonitis, which is about as generic a disabled list cause as you can give for Clayton Kershaw. Is it a shoulder issue? Is it an elbow thing? The Dodgers didn't give any timeline on when he'd be back.
I heard his legs fell off.
Maybe his legs fell off. Who knows? But, you know, the last 2 years he's had DL stays because of the back thing, and back issues really worry you because everything else relies on back. If you're compensating for something in the back, does it screw up the shoulder? What are the dynamics that are interplaying between those two sides of
Kershaw's
your body?
Kershaw's a max effort guy. I mean, every pitch he throws is max effort.
And it sucks, you know, from a baseball standpoint. The Dodgers and Giants, when those teams are good, it's better for baseball. And I hate that line of logic because I never want it to be real, but it is. When the Yankees and Red Sox are playing meaningful games, there's a reason why that's the most hyped rivalry in sports. Yeah. I think there are certain things that are overblown about those rivalries, of course. But
those first two games of the series has been really good.
Yeah,
like, to be honest,
a reason why, you know, I mean, there's a reason why Michigan Ohio State is the game that everybody talks about on that weekend every fall. There's a reason why Duke North Carolina are on national television every time they play for the last 30 years. There are reasons for that. When the Giants and Dodgers are duking it out, it's good for baseball. I think the Giants-Dodgers rivalry is as good or better than Red Sox-Yankees because I've been to both games, and I think Giants and Dodgers fans are way more entertaining and way more hate-filled to be around.
They literally killed each other, man.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that part's not entertaining, I guess I should say. Should clarify. But, you know, it sucks. From a baseball perspective, it sucks to see a team make it the World Series, get to Game 7, and then the next year, like, if Clayton Kershaw doesn't come back from this, you know, I mean, that's a team that still has a lot of promise, obviously, and they have some prospects. They have Walker Buehler still, but, like, I don't want to say it's the closing of the Dodgers window, but have the Dodgers gone over the hump? Are the Dodgers headed toward a stretch of seasons in which they're fighting for playoff berths, but they're not quite a top-of-the-division caliber team? Like, and that's what the Rockies right now have aimed for, is that you would be coming into your era of contention when other teams are falling off. I don't think the D-backs beyond this season, because of all the money questions that they have coming up, are really going to be able to retool and keep this group of guys
without much of a farm system.
Yeah,
it's okay, but it's not great at all.
The Rockies right now, like, it's weird to say this on May 10th with a team that's five games over 500, but this is, in the large scheme of things, this is shaping up the way I think you would have hoped on May 10th it was shaping up. You're a team that's playing decent ball despite not having played your best ball by any stretch of the imagination. You're five games over 500, you're 3.5 back in the division, and at some point the team you're chasing is going to cool off. And the team that you're normally chasing is two teams back of you and is 4.5 games back of you, and everybody's hurt on that team.
And they've lost 10 of 15.
Whoa, that is weird. That is a weird, you know, and we've seen so much over the last few seasons when the Dodgers get injuries that they're able to play through and still win 100 plus games. But this year, it's just like, it reminds me of that Tig Notaro bit where Tig talked about during her set after she was diagnosed with cancer and the thing that really made Tig blow up, when she talks about how God never gives you more than you can handle. And with Tig, it was she had an intestinal infection and then her mother died and then she went through a breakup and then she was diagnosed with cancer. And all she could think of was God sitting there going, no, I think she can take a little bit more. Like that, that right now in a sports context, like the Dodgers are like, you know, Turner's out. Let's throw Seager on there. How about Kershaw too?
Talk about like pitcher wins all you want. And I'm not saying this as a defining aspect of the team, but over the last 3 weeks, there's only been one Dodgers starting pitcher to earn a victory. Even just like that, you got to go five innings, have the team as a lead. At the very least, that's my point here. One Dodgers pitcher, starting pitcher, has gotten a win in the last 3 weeks, and it was Walker Buehler, and he did it twice.
Wow. That is amazing.
It has been a weird, weird time in Dodger Town.
That is amazing. It's very strange. But the ultimate lesson, Rockies are doing fine right now.
Yeah, calm down, guys.
Yeah, calm down, you crazies. You know, this weekend will be interesting. They get the Brewers coming in. The Brewers are a team that in that division in the Central, everybody's fighting for a playoff spot. Four teams are separated by one game. Cardinals 20-14. Brewers a half game back. Pirates a half game back. Cubs are a game back. And then there's the Reds.
Oh,
10-27.
Who just took a series from the Mets?
Yeah.
The Mets.
Nico Blankenship, the sports information director at the University of Denver, the head of sports information over there, who is from the Cincinnati area, texted me yesterday a tweet from the Reds. And Nico said, they have 10 wins, but maybe this should count as the 11th. The Reds tweeted out the Mets lineup and said, can somebody send this to the visiting clubhouse?
Because
the Mets batted out of order in the first inning yesterday.
In the first, that's so hard to do.
And they had a runner in scoring position and ended up with an inning-ending automatic out.
And then they lost by one run in 10 innings.
Just the Mets. Just the most Mets thing ever.
Oh, like, how do the Mets keep finding new ways to be the Mets?
I have no idea. No idea. And they started 11-1, and they're 18-17 now. And 16, the Mets. They've lost 8 out of 10. They are not a good team at the moment.
So quickly, which Twitter was around for.
What Rockies moment, what classic Rockies moment in franchise history do you wish Twitter was around for?
Do you have one on top of your head? You can go first.
I do.
Go ahead.
Jim Leland leaving.
Ooh, okay.
Jim Leland signs on at the beginning of the 98 season. All of this, there's so much promise. He actually signed on at the end of 97. I think he came, the press conference introduced Jim Leland as the next manager of the Rockies. I think it was October of 97. All of these grandiose plans. Yeah, it's a team that's positioned well to compete. They're going to spend some money. They're going to get us some talent on the free agent market over the offseason. They go into 98. That 98 Rockies team was abysmal. And Jim Leland, after one season, resigns. And Jim Leland, I held a grudge against for the rest of his career, because he was a I got the years wrong, by the way. 98 was when he signed. 99 was the season. I was mixing things up. 99 season, they ended up going 72-90. And Jim Leland coming in was just the blowhard of all blowhards of, it can be done here. This is going to be a successful franchise. I've had success everywhere I've gone. This is going to be great. By the end of the year, I think he announced at the beginning of September that he was done, and basically just admitted that the Rockies had killed his love for baseball. But like for the rest of his career, was just like, crotchety Jim Leland. He's a tough old school baseball guy. No, he's not. Jim Leland made it through one season in Colorado, ran with his tail tucked, was the worst manager in franchise history because of everything that went along with it. And the Rockies Twitter freak out. I think because the Rockies were like bottoming out at that stage, it would have been hilarious because we all would have been so very nihilistic. And that's when Rockies Twitter is at its best. I think that's mine.
I mean, didn't also his wife force him to leave after Columbine? Not to get weird and gross, but like
I do remember that was part of
wasn't that part of it?
The larger his baseball narrative was it's impossible to get it done here. They're never going to be successful.
Right.
This is taking too much out of me. But there was something about that where early on in the season, I think after Columbine happened, he had made some comments about like I do want to be closer to my family and et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, from a baseball context, I think Jim Leland, you know.
If only he would have waited it out, you know, school shootings would be totally normalized.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway.
That's the world we live in now. Yeah. Anyway, yours.
I'm debating on a couple here. It's easy to say like, oh, you know, when they clinch in 95 or EY's first homer. Like, I'm kind of, I want it to be like the, like a Todd Helton's chase for 2000, for 400.
Oh, okay. Oh, that'd be a good one. Because every day that's something
every
new.
Day that's a yeah, thing. Like every cool. day you're just like, oh, he's at 406 now. Or like, because he was there in the mid August, I want to say he was over 400, right?
Yeah.
I believe
yeah,
in that season.
I think you're right.
Like, so, and that's an everyday thing. Like, you know, Helton goes like 1-for-3, everyone freaking out, like, oh my God, he's not going to do it. His
yeah,
average went down 8 points.
But that was an exciting, and it was not a good season either. And that was an exciting thing to follow in an otherwise bad season.
Yeah, he, let's see, where was he? What was last time he was 400? Last time he was at 400, okay, it wasn't June, but he was at 397.
Good God.
On August 28th.
Wow, that is nuts. That is nuts. That would have been a fun one. That's a good selection.
And they had a rough September, quote unquote, and finished at 372, 463, 698.
Get him out of here. He's awful.
Let's see how far back he finished in the MVP voting that year.
Cool.
Because I'm sure it was like something stupid. Because that year he had an incredible season, obviously. Led the league in average OBP and slugging, so obviously in OPS as well, in total bases, in hits. He had 59 doubles that year, led in an RBI with 147, 42 homers. He walked 103 times, struck out 61 times, and finished fifth in the MVP voting. Fifth. He got one first place vote, though. Fifth behind Jeff Kent, Barry Bonds, Mike Piazza, and Jim Edmonds.
Makes sense.
8.9 wins above replacement that year, which was far and away better than anybody else on that list.
But nobody had heard of wins above replacement at that point.
Nope.
Amazing. Yeah. I got to run. I got an appointment in like 2 minutes that I got to get to. Tweet us your thoughts on the Rockies Twitter moment you wish would have been around at Purple Dino Cast, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com.
Buy our shirts.
purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com. Buy our shirts. We love you. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye. Oh, hurro.
Whoa! Whoa! Whoa!
What? You should stop that. Anytime.
Yeah, the new jazzy ringtone on Skype is way better than the old one.
Yeah, it's definitely got me going.
It's way better.